Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This is Matt, your host, and this week we are chatting with the amazing and hilarious Tracy Hamilton. Tracy has been on the show before. She was a guest on our episode about Maria Bamford, and this week she comes back for just a one-on-one chat. Tracy is just a good human being. I can't stress that enough. She is just a kind and awesome person. She is the host of a show that ran for 2 years at Comedy Bar called Love Is Everywhere. It transitioned into a podcast, and you can check it out wherever your podcast needs are met. You can also find her on Instagram and Twitter at Hamiltrace, Hamiltrace. This week we chat about, you know, her work as a comedian, a storyteller, and just an all-around awesomely funny person, her favorite comedy inspirations, and the world of comedy and laughing in general. Please sit back and enjoy this conversation. And please also check out Tracy's podcast. I do produce it, so I will not pretend I do not have a bit of a bias there. But she just does a really amazing thing that I feel helps a lot of people. And in these times right now, everybody can use a little bit of help. All right. Thanks very much, and enjoy the show. Hello, welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. Today we're having a conversation with Tracy Hamilton. Hi, Tracy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, you were originally on our Maria Bamford episode and with Jess Grant, and that's how I first met you in real life. So I'm glad to be able to have you back on the show. I guess, you know, you were on for Maria Bamford, but do you have a favorite, like, special or comedy album that you really enjoy?
It's really hard to narrow down something like that, I think, for sure.
But I always, like, it's like when somebody says, well, what's your favorite album? Like, well, is it from my depressing emo phase in high school or my, like, angst-ridden college phase? Like, you know, how do you know? Like, it's like, what mood are you in at one time kind of thing?
Yeah, definitely. I think there are definitely a few standouts, particularly with specials, but I do have favorite albums as well. Classic New in Town, John Mulaney. I think that was such a hard-hitting special for me when I first saw it, and just really fell in love with his comedy. And it's one that I've gone back to over and over and over again. Like, I've rewatched that special countless times. I probably have it almost memorized at this point.
The thing I love about John Mulaney is, in a way, he's bringing back an old-fashioned kind of comedy, but it feels as modern and vital now as it did. And, like, I guess the guy in the suit up there, like, there's that distance, but at the same time, it's like, he still feels personable and he's approachable. The show before the last JFL 42, or the year before that when he was here, I saw him perform that horse in a hospital joke from his last special.
Oh my God,
live.
I love that joke.
It was
so
this is like peak comedy, because he's like, you know what he's talking about. But he's doing it in such a delightful way that it doesn't get you depressed. It keeps you up and keeps you laughing and cheerful. But at the same time, it's like delivering this possibly one of the most political jokes of mm-hmm. all of his material ever.
Easily. Well, like, he usually doesn't even touch on politics. And yeah. he handles that joke so well because he talks quite directly about politics without ever naming a name or saying anything directly. It's all just implied, which yeah. in itself says a lot.
Yeah, and it's like he's brought that craftsmanship to the table from the very beginning of his stand-up career.
Such a good writer, a precise writer, like absolutely yeah. no wasted space. Like everything is just mwah. Yeah. Like
and then you watch like his sketches on Saturday Night Live, and especially the rejected ones that they're like, well, he's hosting, we'll let him do another one, where there are these like ridiculous over like the lobster musical number mm-hmm. that he did.
It's just he has a really like silly, almost cartoonish sensibility in some of his work outside of his stand-up.
Yes, yeah.
He's an interesting person because he's been so successful in a bunch of different genres now that you can see that there's like a different comedic tone to each of those genres for him.
Yeah.
Which is just so interesting, the different parts of somebody's like comedy personality and which ones fit better in different formats.
Yeah. And Jim Gaffigan's nemesis on Jim Gaffigan's sitcom.
It's
hilarious though. It's really just Jim Gaffigan making fun of himself with John Mulaney as like the mirror there, because at the very end he gets like a TV, John Mulaney gets a TV show on the network that Jim Gaffigan's TV show is on, but they're like, who would do it on that stupid network? And it's just like, oh. So it's like he's really game to let like himself be the butt of the joke in the service of the bigger joke.
Same thing on Crashing.
Yeah.
Playing himself.
Oh,
as
okay.
Dylan.
No, I haven't gotten that far.
Oh my gosh. It's fantastic. Like that whole show is amazing, but he plays himself on it, and Pete Holmes' character is opening for him. And he's such a villain and so good at it. It's absolutely so hilarious.
I think one of my favorite things by him too is the sack lunch bunch too.
Oh, where it's so just good.
He's so willing to just chase the joy of funny, you know? And he's like, when I was a kid, I had things that made me laugh. I wanted to do something to make kids laugh, so I did this. And it's mm-hmm. like, he didn't steal the show away from the kids. The kids were the heart of that. It's like, he's a giving performer. You know, that's something I find like really inspirational. It's like, you don't have to steal the limelight to make it funny. You want to serve the funny, not serve yourself kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, are there any comedians that you think maybe helped influence or helped you shape your voice when you were starting in stand-up?
Yeah, I think like it's a weird mix. There's going to be a weird one in here. But early on, it was Dimitri Martin, mm-hmm. Mitch Hedberg, and Mike Birbiglia. Which is funny because I didn't do storytelling or one-liners. So I don't know, like somewhere in between, like most of my jokes are usually like between a minute and 2 minutes mm-hmm. on average. So not quite one-liners, not quite stories. And then the weird one is Kyle Cease.
Oh, I don't know Kyle. No.
Okay, so Kyle Cease was a pretty successful comedian in like, I want to say like the mid-2000s.
Okay.
And he has disappeared now. Now he's a motivational speaker.
Okay.
And there was like a big scandal with, well, not exactly a scandal because he didn't actually do anything wrong, but there was this thing with Kyle Cease around like, I want to say like 2006, 2007, where he was teaching this comedy class. It was like a comedy album boot camp. Mm-hmm. So you would like come to this place and it was like a week-long thing, and it was him and another guy, I can't remember who, and they would teach this comedy class, and it was pretty expensive. Mm-hmm. And so he came under fire from like all like all these other comedians who were being like, this is bullshit, like, why are you teaching this class, like, you're just trying to rip people off, like, I don't know, people were mad that he was teaching a class, which I don't think is totally valid, but in any case, yeah, he kind of came under fire for that, and then he moved, he ended up moving from stand-up into motivational speaking. But what was really influential for me with him was that he's just a total fucking weirdo.
Like, okay.
His jokes are so strange. Yeah. And I just loved that. It was sort of like the same thing that's appealing in the weirdness of something like Comedy Bang Bang.
Sort of like an Emo Phillips kind of vibe.
Like, just so strange. He had this one bit that I think about all the time, which was him at a piano. And this wasn't even in, like, I think he had only one special. But I found him, like, through MySpace, I think.
that brief period where MySpace was the arbiter of all cool.
But it ages me a little bit, dropping a MySpace reference. But, yeah, I found him on MySpace, and it was this one, like, 10 to 12 minute video of him in a bar, like doing some bar show, some nothing show. And so he's just like fucking around, like doesn't really care. And he's doing all like these extra silly bits. Mm-hmm. And I watched that video over and over again. There was a piano on stage, and it wasn't part of his act, like he didn't bring the piano, but he goes over to the piano at one point and starts doing these jokes with the piano. And I think about them all the time. He did this long extent of it where he would just play the beginning of Elton John songs. So just like the first couple bars up to the first lyric. So he would be like, oh, like, here's my impression of Elton John calling his kids for dinner. And then he plays like, do, 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 hey, kids. All right, so the next one, and then, like, he would just do, like, the first line of all these Elton John songs, and then he did this long bit where it was him talking to Trolley from Mr. Rogers,
mm-hmm.
just the train, and it's just him, like, mashing on the keys, to make yeah. Trolley sound, and he's just having this conversation about going to get tested with Trolley. So strange, and I think that let me see that, like, you can be maximum weird,
yeah,
in it, which I'm not, like, crazy out there now, but when I first started, my jokes were definitely in that vein. They were very strange.
That's one of the challenges, though. I mean, like, now that I started performing myself, I'm very restrained, and I think I need to learn to open up more, mm-hmm. you know, like, so I'm constantly, like, tweaking and fiddling on these little details where I'm like, actually I need to, like, broaden that out, not necessarily make it a broadly accessible joke, but just open myself up to having fun with the moment,
yeah, being a little more silly and letting loose a little more with what's happening as it goes.
Yeah, and it's you know, like, you know, I think back to, like, people I loved growing up, like Robin Williams was like that, where he was just embracing the moment, every moment of all time kind of thing. And it's great to see somebody where I'm gonna have to definitely check that. I mean, MySpace is a little bit hard to get off.
Find Kyle Cease videos anymore. I think that you can still find the special he did, which I thought was okay.
Mm.
But if you can find any, like, random clips of him that don't look like a special.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I have to check that out. Now, you've opened for some really terrific people, and you performed with them, like Kurt Brownler, Jackie Cation, who I met, who's an awesome, awesome person, Aparna Nancharla, Chris Gethard, who is terrific. So as a comedian, what have been some of your favorite moments, like just being out there and, like, performing with these awesome people?
Question. I think, oh man, that's really hard. Yeah, I've been very lucky to get to work with a lot of really fantastic people. I was working with them in a very limited capacity, like it was like one night opening gigs, but still, there have been so many good moments. Mostly what I remember is the people who were really kind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Kurt Brownler is such a good guy. Like, he was just so nice, and like he's kind of a big deal, and I was like somebody that he'd never met before. And he was so, like, right there, like, asking me questions about myself and, like, trying to make sure that I felt comfortable and wasn't nervous, like, and, yeah, he was fantastic. And then mostly what I remember is, like, the audience is different for these kind of shows, right? Okay. Because usually when I'm performing in Toronto, it's a lineup of, you know, between 5 and 8 people. So the people who are there are going for a show. They aren't going for a specific person, right?
Yeah.
But whereas with these shows, these people are showing up because they're fans of this particular comedian. So you really, it's really interesting to see how that shifts the tone of what they're interested in and what they like, and sort of their, like, essence as an audience is really different. And the certain audiences will be really into stuff that doesn't play very well normally. Like, I'm trying to think of an example, like a Chris Gethard crowd is totally down for jokes about mental health, right? So, like, my joke about anxiety works way better in front of his audience, right?
For sure.
Cameron Esposito has an amazing audience. Her fans are incredible and, like, so positive and so on board with everything. I think that was, like, one of the hottest crowds that I've ever played for. Was her fans. But, and actually, that show in particular, that one would be a very special one because... she was doing her new hour, which is all about her divorce, which was, like, recent at that point. So it's, I was getting to see it while it was being worked out, right?
Yeah.
So, like, still really raw. All of these jokes are really new. It worked so well. It was hilarious and, like, very well done for something that was still in development, especially. But watching her get, like, really real and really vulnerable with this crowd, and to be so fresh off of all of these things that she was writing about, that was really powerful to watch. The, like, her giving that kind of vulnerability on stage, and then also the way that the audience was totally down for it, and, like, there to catch her kind of thing. It was, that was really special.
I mean, her audience have a very intimate relationship with her, because she's so out there publicly with her experiences and her life, and she engages with a lot of her fans a lot, so it's got to be, like, a very intimate opportunity for, like, a performer to perform for people who probably know as much about their life as that performer's family in a lot of ways. That's cool. Awesome. For 2 years, you ran a show at Comedy Bar called Love Is Everywhere, which you transformed into a wonderful podcast that I'm glad to help with. So what inspired you to combine like self-care and the science of happiness and comedy into, like, at first a regular recurring show and then the podcast?
I think that it's just kind of a natural combination of my interests, if I boil it down to the furthest point, like personal development and stuff like that. That's something that I've always been really interested in, always trying to be a better version of myself. And now I put that in different terms. I maybe would have said a few years ago, be a better version of myself. Now I replace better with happier, because I think that covers the same thing, but more to the point. That I think all of our goals are just us trying to be happier, right? Anything that you're going after, any improvement that you're trying to make to yourself, is ultimately just because you're in search of more happiness. So that's a big interest of mine. I read a lot about that kind of thing in my leisure time, and I advise my friends using what I have learned. So I think it was natural for me to try and bring that into my art in some way. I think that comedians make really good fodder for guests in this particular arena as well, for a few reasons. For one thing, because they add levity to it, right? Like, sometimes when you're talking about things like self-care or, like, body image and things like that, it's serious stuff, you know? But we can have these, like, really open, vulnerable conversations, but have a certain air of levity and humor to it because we're comedians and we can't turn that off. especially when we know we're being recorded, so it naturally makes it a little bit funny in times as well. But I think there's something else about comedians where, like, our whole job is to be introspective, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To look at ourselves and all the different pieces of ourselves, and to reflect on like how we feel about things. And so I think that comedians take really well to these kinds of assignments. We definitely with exception, like, not every comedian is going to sink in their teeth into it that way, but I feel like most comedians are very curious about themselves.
Yes.
And so they welcome an opportunity to do a little more digging. Mm-hmm. So they come up with really interesting insights and stuff into these topics when I talk to them about it. Yeah.
Do you find there's like one area that a lot of people seem to gravitate towards in the comedy world? Like when you, because I know you have like these different categories when you're asking people for shows.
So I've got a list of like 7 categories that I think all of the assignments sort of generally fall into. Almost, you could almost look at it like a really broad checklist of like, if you've got a pretty good handle on all of these areas, you're going to be generally feeling pretty good. So it's things like, actually, I could read out the list and then I'll tell you what ones people always want and what ones people never want, which frustrates me to no end. People are very set in their ways.
Yes.
All right. So the categories are self-care, mindfulness/being present, positive outlook/gratitude, connection with others, self-image/self-esteem, accomplishing goals, forgiveness of self or others, and anxiety or overwhelm.
Okay.
So there's 8 different categories. Everybody wants accomplishing goals.
Everyone wants to get to that next level.
It makes me so mad. not really. Like, I still do them, and I still think those conversations are valuable. But I try to limit how many people I let pick that one.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I just remove it outright from the list when I give it to people, if I'm not in the mood, because I think that comedians have a tendency to measure their worth by their productivity, and I think that is unhealthy. Yeah. So sometimes also, like, I'll kind of not quite trick people, but, you know, when people pick accomplishing goals, and I know that this is an overachiever person who has, like, a really hard hustle and is out all the time and working so hard already, I don't really think they need my help with achieving more things. I don't think that that is what they need from me. I think in the realm of accomplishing goals for those people, what I need to give them is some rest, some perspective, or some like self-reflection time. So I'll give them a category that's sort of in that thing. But yeah, everybody wants accomplishing goals. For some reason, no one wants connection with others.
I'd have thought that would be like one of the top ones, because like the entire point of, you know, being a performer is you engage with your audience and you connect with them.
Also, like we've been doing episodes through this whole COVID time, and I thought that now is when people are going to pick connection with others because everybody's isolated, and no, more people wanted accomplishing goals.
So it's that illusion. Like once the lockdown started, I didn't stop working my day job. My day job, okay, well, you just work from home now, but I still like filled every evening with something, because in my back of my head, everybody's like, oh, now I'll be able to do this or do that. So I think like everybody's like trying to fill every moment, not realizing.
They're going to fatigue themselves horribly in this if they're trying to get a bunch of stuff done.
Yeah.
Like, this is, if that's how you're handling it, more power to you, and that is fine. But if you are not feeling especially inspired or especially productive right now, that is so not your job right now.
Yeah.
And you absolutely do not need to put any more pressure on yourself. If anything, just make the goal being better to yourself in general. Like if all that you've been able to accomplish during this time is that like you cooked more at home, or paid more attention to the people you love most, you know, like even if it was just that, that's fine. That's totally fine. Even if all you did was like, hey, now I floss every day. That's fine.
Yeah. I think people have been really, and it's weird because there's been this sort of like push almost in the media in a way, just how they talk about all of this stuff. And it's sort of like trickled down through social media where people are like, I'm going to binge this show, or I'm going to watch all of this stuff, or I'm going to read 35 books kind of thing. And it's like, just be happy, you know, just listen to what your brain and body are saying and don't listen to anything outside of that. But it's hard. It's hard. It's like we're also like, oh, well, we got to do this. We got to be productive because I'm not leaving it.
Yeah.
It doesn't change your max capacity just because you're not leaving the house kind of thing. Now, how have you like enjoyed the jump from the show on the stage to the podcast? Like how's that been?
Yeah, it's interesting. I love doing the podcast. I think like, so the format with the live show was that I would, just to break down the basic format of the show in general, is I give a comedian an assignment of something that is supposed to boost your happiness, so usually some kind of self-help or personal development exercise. They do that exercise for a week, and then I interview them about it and talk to them about how it went. So on the live show, I would have four comedians on. I would have given them all assignments. Then I would talk to them about how the assignment went, and they would do stand-up or improv, etc., whatever their thing was. But the interviews on that show, like, we only had 75 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you've got four comedians doing a set. You've got, the intro, me at the beginning, warming things up. In the end, those interviews ended up being maybe 3 minutes each. Constantly I would find that there were so many more things that came up in that 3 minute conversation that I would love to talk more about. And with the podcast, I get to just really focus in, and have like an actually in-depth conversation about it. And I think that we learn a lot more about why that assignment is valuable. Mm-hmm. Through that, I learned things about like, oh, I didn't realize that was going to be a valuable thing in this assignment until this person had this interesting perspective on it, or things like that. The one thing that I miss is seeing the audience, because I'm a comedian and I feed off of that. Yeah. but it was like, there were a few months of that show in particular where there was just some kind of really special energy in the room. Like, usually it was given by the comedians and the way that they engaged with their assignments, or like things would happen that were like these really special moments during the live show. And I could, because it was in the cabaret room at Comedy Bar, which is a relatively intimate space, I could see most of the faces, at least in the first half of the audience. And I could see when somebody was really touched by something.
Yeah.
Or where like I'd say something that would really affect somebody. Like, you know, give an example of something I've said in this podcast. Like, if I say, like, you don't need to measure your worth by your productivity, like, whatever you're doing is fine. I could see in the audience on the face of somebody who really needed to hear that day.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a really special thing.
Yeah. I mean, I went to a few of the shows, live shows, and I've, you know, been able, I mean, lucky enough and up until the lockdown to be at recordings of the podcast. And it's like, the podcast has helped me be happier and just find peace or understand some of how I've dealt with things that have come up in my life in ways that I didn't even see until I sat and heard these like intimate conversations that some of them are tearjerkers, you know, like some of them are just like heartbreaking or heart mending. Mm-hmm. And it's been really, it's a really powerful thing. And that intersection of comedy and personal tragedy in a lot of ways, it's like it's a healing balm, and it's kind of beautiful to see how people are able to take something that may have been hard or painful and use it to heal themselves and maybe also help heal others. It's just an amazing experience.
I love hearing that. Thank you.
Now we're in a bit of a weird time right now, and a lot of clubs are struggling. Who knows what's going to be like there when we get out.
Yeah.
How do you think the big places will probably weather this fine, mm-hmm. but for like, how do you think it's going to be the comedy world for comedians coming out of like lockdown and when we start to finally perform again?
Yeah. I'm really curious to see, like, it's hard to know what it's going to look like, really. I think, yeah. Smaller venues are going to struggle. Like, a lot of the shows in Toronto don't even happen at clubs, right? Like, a lot of the shows are hosted by different bars and restaurants and stuff that'll have a comedy night that have a separate room. And I think I'm hoping that those venues are able to stay in business because they're affected just as much as the regular comedy clubs.
Sure.
They can't be open right now. So we'll see how many places stay alive. Mm-hmm. Hopefully they do and they still want a comedy night there because that would be really great. But most of these venues make most of their money from drink sales.
Yes.
So the price of a ticket is sort of irrelevant. It's more about bar sales, which means that people need to be hanging out.
Yeah.
Right? You can't just go in, see the show and leave.
Yeah.
They want you to hang out afterwards and buy more drinks. So it's going to be difficult, I think, to make money after this, especially because like a room will fit less people because you have to have them farther apart. In terms of what it's going to look like for comedians, I think that because the big places will probably be fine, I think it'll be the comedy stage time available will probably mostly go to pros to start. Because it'll be the established places, and that's fair. Like,
if
somebody's gonna get to go back, it should be the people who depend on this for their entire income.
Sure.
And then I think smaller shows and things like open mics and stuff will come back gradually, which is gonna be kind of interesting because I feel like a lot of people are going to be trying to do new material, but because the little bar show open mics might not be running, where do they have to work out that material? It's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, and like the Zoom shows and Twitch shows don't have the same vibe.
I think, it's like, definitely different. I think like more than maybe any other kind of comedy, I think that stand-up is really sensitive. Like, it's a really, I would describe it as like a fragile ecosystem.
Yeah.
Where like you change one of the ingredients in what makes stand-up work and it's totally not going to work at all.
Yeah.
Right? Like it needs to be, first of all, indoors in a dark room with a low ceiling where people are close together, physically close together.
Yeah.
Because you need, like, even a show where you have maybe a lower turnout so people can take up more space and sit farther apart from each other.
Yeah.
They're not going to laugh as much as if they're clustered together. I think because they are more easily able to see themselves as one thing.
Yeah. Like, well, a laugh is like, it's when you like drop a stone into a puddle, it just spreads, you know?
Exactly.
So you get that one person laughing and the other person like, oh yeah. And even subconsciously, they're like, they accuse them to the funny that's in there. So, I mean, I've been watching a lot of shows, like the Zoom shows, like Comedy Bar has been putting a lot on, and this great place that like I'm really looking forward to being able to go back to, and they have a lot of comedians who are regulars there who are amazing comedians, but like there's not having that audience interaction, like the way I think they have like the closed Zoom thing that they're then Twitch streaming out, so there's not an audience to laugh, and it's these people who are pros who are telling funny jokes but not having that give that take and that return.
It makes a big difference.
You can see them second guessing themselves when it's like, because no, you got it, that joke is good. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
They have no confirmation of whether or not that worked, whether or not it's going well.
It
I've heard the analogy, I think it's a Brian Regan quote, where it says like comedians are musicians and the audience is the instrument that we play.
Yeah.
Right, and that's so true. So it's like somebody who's a guitar player just moving their hands as if they're like playing air guitar versus somebody actually playing a guitar.
I found like I've been trying to do some shows every couple of weeks, get friends and family and get people I know who are still, they're not paid comics kind of thing, but like people who've been taking classes with me or people I'm like, I just throw it out to people who are interested to work material. And I leave them, I ask all of the people who are in the audience to leave their mics and cameras on, because that way it's like having an audience.
Then you can hear at least the people who are participating in the show can laugh.
Yes.
Having one laugh makes a difference. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
I think it's such an important ingredient, even as an audience member.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It, like we had Todd Van Allen on one show, who I was lucky enough to have teach me in second level stand-up at Second City. And he turned it to gallery mode and just started doing crowd work, because this is like this first chance to perform since he moved out of the city. And he started doing crowd, and it was like, it worked. It was just like, because he's, the mics were on, people were reacting, he could see their faces. So it can be done. It's just, it's just a matter of changing gears, I think.
Yeah. And figuring out how to do it properly. Like, I think that's the right approach of like, the audience is not visible. The audience does not have a microphone.
Yeah.
The performers can have a microphone. Because like, whoever has the microphone has the power. That's a big thing with stand-up. Like, you're never going to hand an audience member the microphone. That's never going to happen. You never let that microphone leave your hands. But I think having the other performers laughing, well, I think that's one way that we as stand-ups could probably learn a lot from improvisers.
Yes.
Like, improvisers stick around and be your audience. When improvisers are on stage, if they're not in a scene, they're the audience for that scene. They're part of it. They're laughing. So it's just us sticking around, watching the rest of the show, and laughing generously.
Yeah. Now, I'm totally stealing this question from Joe Vu's interview with you from a while ago. Now, you had said your comedy was a turtle. Is it still a turtle, or is it transformed into a different animal?
I forgot about that. What animal is my stand-up? Yeah, maybe it's not a turtle. Maybe it's like a rabbit.
I can see that. I can see it's fluffy and bouncy.
Yeah, it's like a little bit warm and fuzzy, you know, but it's got some power in those legs.
It can go, it can get going when it wants
to. It can run.
Now, I've asked this pretty much everybody I've sat down with. What is your sort of weirdest performance experience? So I know we talked about like your like cool ones and stuff, but like for example, like Courtney Gilmore talked about doing a nude, performing on a nude beach kind of thing. So like, do you have like any experience where it's like, this is the strangest room that I have ever performed in, or the strangest performance?
Oh, absolutely. This might, like, I don't see how I could do a gig that would be weirder than this. Like, maybe that'll happen at some point. But this was the weirdest night I've ever had in comedy. It was me and Leonard Chan, who's also a great comedian, by his album. And me and Leonard Chan were doing this corporate gig. So corporate gigs are any private stand-up show that you get booked to do. So that could be for a company, you know, for their like Christmas party. It could be a private party, like anywhere that you're being booked for a private event directly by the person who runs that event. And it's not at a comedy club. Those are corporates. So we were doing this corporate gig, which was a private party for a guy's birthday. It was his 65th birthday, and it was his best friend was hosting the party, and he booked us to do this gig. So what he wants from us was, I guess him and this other guy, the guy whose birthday it was, I guess that they've been friends since they were kids, and on significant birthdays, they would pull pranks on each other. Both of these guys had money, and most of the pranks sounded like them just leaving statues on each other's lawns. But in any case, what this guy wanted for this significant birthday of his friend was for us to pretend that we work at the restaurant that this party was being held at. What we were told was that the party's going to be like 16 people. It's going to be in a private room at this restaurant. So he wanted me and Leonard to pretend that we work at the restaurant and to mess with the guy. That was the instruction that we were given. And then do stand up.
Okay.
So it's already weird.
Yeah. But we're like, you're going in on like an unusual footing already, right? In the gate.
So we asked the guy, like, okay, can you give us like some information about this friend? And what we were told is like, he's like a high up this company, so like he really likes to be in charge, like he likes to be the one making decisions. And so we're like, okay. And then he's like, he's also like a a real nerd about wine. He's like very into wine. So like maybe one, maybe you guys could be sommeliers and like mess with him with the wine. So we're told this guy, like, the impression that we're getting is like, all right, this is an alpha guy who likes to be in charge, like wants to command the room. He's picky and especially about wine. And we're like, okay, like we can sort of work with this. So we had all of these things planned for like, okay, like we'll be, Leonard will be the sommelier and I'm the sommelier in training. And we planned all these gags for Leonard to like make little asides to me, like when he's recommending the wine, point to the most expensive one and be like, this one here. And then turn to me and be like, when you're recommending wine, you always want to recommend the most expensive one on the menu. Like little insider things that, and we had all of these gags planned, which were pretty funny if it, like in honesty. And then we show up at the gig and it is 100% absolutely nothing like what we were told it was going to be. First of all, it isn't a restaurant, but we're not in a private room.
Oh no.
We're not in a private room. We're right in the middle of the restaurant in just an open section where there are like other tables all around us.
I
talked to the management and I was like, oh, are you going to be seating these tables like around our party? And he was like, yes, yes. And I was like, do you know what we're going to be doing? Like, and this guy was like, you might want to tell people, like, even just so they know that we don't actually work here.
Yeah.
Right? Like, just
why is cracking sommeliers?
And they were like, not concerned. They were like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And we were like, oh, okay. So we've got to do this in front of the whole restaurant. Also, there was no stage light or mic microphone. I'll get to the stand-up part of it in a moment. So we're pretending to be sommeliers. We're also told that everybody at the party except for the birthday guy are in on the joke. They all know what's going to happen, that you're messing with him and then you're doing stand-up. We're pretending to be sommeliers. First of all, the guy is like the warmest, nicest, like sweetest guy in the world. So easygoing, like not an like a big macho alpha guy at all. The impression that we had of him, he's just so warm and sweet. We come over, we're like, hi, like we're the sommeliers, blah blah blah. Like I understand you'll be picking the wine this evening, and he was like, oh, like I trust you, whatever you think is best, like.
Oh no!
Totally, like, and that would be, if we were real sommeliers, that would be the end of that interaction, right?
Yeah.
So we're like, oh no, like we have to stretch this along. So we're like trying to force our way into interacting with him more, and he's sort of like, this is weird, like, but it's not irritating enough to be like, oh, I'm being pranked right now.
Yeah.
It was just awkward. So we just went totally weird with it. We're telling them, like, Leonard said, like, oh, like, in addition to smelling the wine and tasting it, you also want to listen to the sound of the wine. Everyone sound differently, and he's, like, holding the glass up and makes everybody else, like, hold their glass up to their ear and stuff. And, yeah, it was just, like, it was super weird. And then when finally the guy reveals, like, ha, surprise, like, they're actually comedians. Half of the table is, like, ha ha, like we got you. And the other half of the table is like, oh.
They didn't know.
They did not know, like we had been told. And then he's like, and now they're going to do stand-up. And then we had to do stand-up, which, first of all, half of these people didn't know there was going to be stand-up. They're at a birthday party, and they're all interested in talking to each other. They don't want to listen to stand-up.
Yeah.
They're entertaining each other. They don't need us. Also, because we're in the middle of just a busy restaurant with no microphone or anything, we're just standing in front of this table shouting our jokes because it's loud.
Yeah.
So we're just shouting our jokes over the point of this table. And the guy who hired us just looked so unbelievably angry the entire time. Like, I think that it was like he didn't realize that he had created the worst possible environment for stand-up comedy. And yep. So he was, and it had been his idea, and he organized this party. So I think he was just feeling like, oh, no, I hope people are enjoying this because, like, this is going to come down on me. And he didn't feel like they were.
Yeah.
Afterwards, everybody had a great time, and the birthday guy was very happy, and everything was fine, and that guy loosened up. But he just looked so angry the whole time we were performing, and it was so uncomfortable. And, we finished, and me and Leonard were just like, let's get the fuck out of here as fast as we can.
Corporate gigs are hard at the best of times. Yeah, like those, that's like a nightmare story. Like that, if you ever do like a sitcom, has to be in an episode there.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Oh my God, it was the strangest night.
If people wanted to find you online, Love Is Everywhere, the podcast. Yes.
Absolutely, check out the podcast. It is available wherever you get your podcasts. Yeah. iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play.
All of your podcast needs.
Yeah, all of your podcast needs will be fulfilled there. So search for Love Is Everywhere. And then if you want to follow me on social media stuff, you can find me at Hamiltrace. Mostly pictures of my dog on the Instagram. Yeah.
And they're very cute pictures. They're very cute pictures.
Very cute dog.
Yes.
I can't take credit as the photographer.
Well, you know, the model is so adorable.
Exactly.
All right, Tracy. Well, thank you very much. And thank you for listening to Comedy Album Book Club.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.